Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. From Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and The Jungle Book, the Disney Studios live-action platform is on a roll, creating a new way for audiences to encounter these stories. Director Jon Favreau's The Jungle Book won the Oscar for Best Visual Effects. Its groundbreaking technology blended computer-animated animals alongside a human co-star, all set in a vast jungle. Well, Favreau's latest film takes the technology to an entirely new level. The Lion King is not even considered live action. It's something called photoreal. Film contributor Ryan Jay and Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski recently sat down to talk after they attended a screening of The Lion King, and Jay begins by explaining that groundbreaking technology.
You would think that maybe the environments were filmed with a real camera and then these animals are just CGI. But actually, in the production notes that Disney sent us to read as film critics, they explain that it's as though a camera was put inside of a computer where they created virtual reality environments to put these CGI characters into, and everything is choreographed from the camera movement to the environment to the animal, and it's but you can't tell. I went back and forth in emails with the studio to confirm, like, was there not even one frame of the entire film where there's an actual animal on screen? And no, there isn't. So it's remarkable. It looks so real. The suspension of disbelief is so easy and amazing. And we saw this film together, Audrey.
We did, yeah.
And I got the chills the minute it started, the good kind of chills. I broke out and burst out in tears. And there's so much joy. I mean, I found myself like smiling up at the screen at certain times and just really, really living this movie. No contest. This is the best of the new Disney adaptations. I mean, I think one of the confusing things about this whole time is that Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, live action. You know, we want to call this live action because Disney's on a roll now of converting their classic animated films to the Broadway stage and then to the screen, with photoreal characters. But this one is not live action, so we have to be really, you know, stickler about that.
Yeah, it's rather than, you know, calling it specifically live action, you know, it's blending the live action techniques they've learned with this new virtual reality tool that they created. So essentially, in order to clarify it for some listeners, and honestly, maybe you'll understand it more when you see it, but I'm still just kind of blown away by it. But they created a virtual reality set, essentially, where much like a movie set, you still have the director and the director of photography. You have the camera people walking about, the lighting. But they're all wearing virtual reality headsets. So imagine perhaps them just being in a big empty soundstage, but still, as you mentioned, physically setting up these camera shots. So I think that added a really, really great authentic touch to have those cameras be able to show that human touch, because some of those camera angles, it's almost as if it was handheld.
Right. Like
there is that element. It's not all super saturated, or you don't feel disconnected to it because it's all generated, not by any physical creatures.
I agree. I think it even improves upon what we saw in the groundbreaking effects for Avatar. And, you know, I'm sure the new Avatars coming out soon will blow us away in their own ways. But this is really next level filmmaking.
Yeah. Do you think this changes the game of filmmaking forward? Like, yes, obviously, it's probably the most expensive project that Disney has ever done.
We don't know the budget. They have not released the budget. We're all dying to know what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's probably the most expensive film or among the most expensive films ever made. And I think it's going to be a question of, they know a property like Lion King is going to go gangbusters at the box office. It's a sure bet. But to take a risk, I think it's going to be hard for other directors or other studios to justify making films like this unless they know, like, maybe a Star Wars movie, maybe something else, you know, we'll see.
It does need the good solid ground to know that this investment is going to pay off.
And right.
You can't get much more beloved than the 1994 Lion King,
no,
original animated movie. So we can also point out that this was based on a screenplay rather than word for word, shot for shot, based on the original animation.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that the soul of the original film remains intact with this Lion King?
Absolutely. And I, you know, it's interesting because there's been some bad reviews coming out. And, you know, we as a film critic myself, you know, I respect everyone's opinion and everything, but I've been really shocked by some of the response to this. And I don't want my review to be defensive against other reviewers, but the animated version, the classic Lion King, is not my favorite animated Disney film. But this version, this photoreal air quote live action version of the Lion King is among my favorite Disney films. It's so magical. I mean, it's everything that you love about the original film. It's all still there. It's probably the truest to the original film, I'd say, than was Aladdin or Beauty and the Beast, which gave more backstory, which added depth to characters. This Lion King stays pretty true, but then there's some surprises in the humor. There's some unexpected lines thrown in there. I don't know if it was, you know, Seth Rogen as Pumbaa and Billy Eichner as Timon are such scene stealers, and they're so great. You know, you got Chiwetel Ejiofor as Scar, and he's amazing.
Adds a real Shakespearean depth to that character.
Totally, yeah. Totally. So it's all just all around brilliant.
As you mentioned, you know, getting emotional at those first opening scenes, I also found myself just like, and I, at the time, I'm like, I don't know why I'm feeling this way,
yeah,
you know, why
totally.
It's hitting you so hard. But I feel like, especially as a lot of the critics, you know, as you mentioned, there are bad reviews. A lot of people are seeing this as unnecessary. But what's your argument for recreating things? Because ultimately, it does introduce things to a new generation. We think, oh, we're the ones who grew up with this. We have the ownership of this. Or, you know, this is our film. But,
right.
You know, what's the argument to do new things like this?
Well, I think that it's a way to see something that we love in a new way. You know, why buy one Lion King DVD when you can buy two? You know, now, I don't think this replaces or I don't think that this is to be necessarily better than the original. It's to sit beside the original animated classic and say you have two ways to view it and go see the stage show on Broadway. You have three ways to see it. The same with Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and The Little Mermaid. You know, The Little Mermaid coming up too. And so it's like, I just think that Disney is brilliant at marketing and maintaining their properties so that they can continue to reinforce their princess brand, their fairy tale brand, their animated classics brand, and renew them with each generation in a new way. I mean, who knows what's after this? How can they ever do The Lion King again? I mean, what's next? Unless, you know, animals actually learn to speak and sing. I don't know how they could do another film version, but there are always remakes and stuff. But Disney, better than any studio, knows how to reinvent and remarket their brand.
Right. And one thing, obviously, it's more realistic animals. There's been complaints, oh, lions don't emote as well. But
right.
I would argue that the scenery and the music makes up for that possible lack of emotion.
And their eyes.
And their eyes.
I mean, baby Simba. I was like, come on, I want one. You know, you like, I mean, I'm a dog person, so like,
yeah.
You know, I've had little dogs, so it's like little baby Simba, I gotta tell you, you just wanna cuddle him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but some of those close-up shots of, mm-hmm. you know, say Rafiki or the meerkat's face,
mm-hmm.
yeah, could have fooled me that it wasn't B-roll from some
oh, totally.
Place in Africa.
Yeah,
you know?
I absolutely thought, especially some of the other wild animals there, in, you know, you just, I really couldn't believe that there were not some actual animals in this movie.
Yeah, they recreated over 80 different species
wow.
and brought it to life. And one thing that I thought they also did well, obviously in an animation, you have much more liberties to set up whatever kind of geography you want.
Mm-hmm.
But here they kept it realistic as if, you know, the natural landscape, yes, this does flow naturally into this. You know, Pride Rock isn't quite the five-storied
yeah.
big rock formation, because in the natural world, that would cause some concern. Like, where does mm-hmm. this come from, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the Pride Rock, and even though, say, you don't necessarily, I don't know if owe the audience is the right word for it, but they were smart in their geography of the settings of these places so that you could picture and you could see, and logistical-wise, like, imagine like, okay, yeah, I can see how these places are actually like
right.
closer together.
They're fantastical and they're real, right? You do see, you know, from the Elephant Graveyard to Pride Rock to the area where Timon and Pumbaa live, which is so lush and gorgeous and so kind of hyper-real, but still not unrealistic. Everything feels so authentic and sincere that you just, I don't know, I was in it. I'm actually seeing it again in the theater because I think this is absolutely one you must see on the big screen.
Of course, we would be remiss not to talk about the cast, because
yes.
this is also what makes this film so good. And only one person is carried over from the original, and that's James Earl Jones as Mufasa, because I think everyone can agree that you can't replace him.
Right.
He is Mufasa.
His voice is iconic. Yeah. You know, and so you're right. There's something about him. I mean, he's Darth Vader. You know, you just can't do better than James Earl Jones.
And I found myself like, it's very intense and emotional, even more so with him and the young Simba scenes mm-hmm. in this reimagining.
It's true. But can we please talk about Queen Bey?
Yes.
Beyoncé.
Beyoncé.
She, Miss Beyoncé Carter Knowles, Knowles Carter.
Knowles Carter.
She is so great as Nala, and she gets a new song. In the film, it's not really a Nala song. It's surprising, you know, a spoiler alert, I guess. But it's a brilliant song. It's not written by Elton John and Tim Rice, who did all the other songs in this film. But she's fantastic.
Yeah, and the song is called Spirit. Now, we also have, you mentioned, you know, Timon and Pumbaa add a whole new dynamic and comedy life to this. That's played by Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen. We also have J.D. McCrae as young Simba, Shahidi Wright Joseph as young Nala. And the casting in that is great because in this film, yes, half is young Simba, young mm-hmm. Nala, and the other half is adult. So the young actors are just as important as the grown-ups.
It's true. And they're so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really, really are outstanding in this. That's star-making turns for those two young actors.
And also, of course, we have Donald Glover, who plays adult Simba. And, you know,
he can
similar
sing.
With him and Beyoncé, they are both musicians so
yeah.
and actors.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think the casting in this and Jon Favreau's whole methodology of pulling all these components together, you know, really adds a bit more dimension to everything?
Absolutely. And one change also in Can You Feel the Love Tonight is so fantastic. And it's, you know, obviously very different in the stage show and the movie than it is in the Elton John radio version. But hearing Donald and Beyoncé duet on that is so gorgeous. Can you feel the love tonight?
Just the imagery to go along with mm-hmm. it, too, is amazing. John Oliver Azazu was a personal favorite of
yes.
mine.
Yes, it was hilarious. And, you know, you kind of can tell it's John Oliver, but it's what you love of John Oliver. And for some reason, it's like, why, you know, he is Zazu. Even when he's just being himself, he sounds like Zazu. He's kind of that guy. So it's brilliant casting there.
All of this seems to be organic. You know, we won't mm-hmm. spoil it, but there's some scenes that obviously you can't just make happen because they're created in this big animated world where there's no rules. You can have someone show up in this costume, or you can have this sweeping pyramid of animals on top of each other, you know, but I think they did a great job of paying homage to those original shots and scenes by adding certain elements that
They remind you.
Yeah, they remind you of what it's mm-hmm. based on.
Yeah, it's reminiscent of, if it wasn't shot for shot, or there's things that they were doing in the animated version, but there's stuff that's reminiscent of it, and it just kind of gives you that inkling. And so for those of us who grew up with it and know it and love it, you just kind of, even if you're not getting it consciously, subconsciously, it's talking to you, and it's so well done. I just loved this movie, and I know that families and children are going to love it. It's such a great story. It's really a perfect musical. That's why it's done so well on Broadway compared to other, you know, Disney runs. And it just, this is another perfect iteration.
And on that note of music, you know, the scores and the themes that Hans Zimmer wrote 25 years ago mm-hmm. are still just as strong today.
That's so true.
Yeah, and they add a little more depth to maybe those themes, a little slight variations. But then you also have a new song from Elton, Never Too Late, which is performed by him, but with arrangements and produced by Lebo M, who also worked on the original.
And that's the end credits.
Yep, and mm-hmm. that's at the end credits. And, of course, written by Elton John and Tim Rice. We also have Pharrell Williams as a producer with some songs. So mm-hmm. do you feel like these new elements just kind of also are an organic growth of where they're taking it?
Sure. I think it's appropriate. I mean, it's exciting when you go to a property and you're adapting. Like, we look at Wicked, which is being turned into a movie from a successful Broadway show, and there will be new songs for that, partly because you want to make Oscar-eligible songs. I don't think end credit songs are necessarily eligible, but, like, Beyoncé's Spirit will certainly be eligible for nomination and consideration. And then the other new songs, I mean, look, there's going to be a soundtrack coming out with the new movie, so some new elements are certainly welcomed, especially from geniuses like Elton John and Beyoncé.
Overall, how do you think this adds to Jon Favreau's portfolio? I mean,
wow. I mean, he is so impressive. I mean, when you look at, you know, he started out with what, Swingers, you know, and how far he's come. And he's such a great actor. He's so fun when we see him in the Marvel universe. And then to see him grow as a director into groundbreaking director. I mean, he is now in the realm of Spielberg with this kind of filmmaking.
And I feel like audiences kind of don't expect that. He kind of like comes out of left field because they may know him through Marvel movies. And we were reading our production notes that a lot of the actors also enjoy working with him because he sees all these different elements, both as a director, producer, and actor.
Well, and he gets it all. It's true. He's such a great writer also. You look at something like Chef, which he wrote, directed, and starred in. And that is such a brilliant, that's such a fantastic, magnificent film and such a great story. He gets storytelling from the heart outward. And so that to see that translate and to keep that integrity of story, and a huge blockbuster like Iron Man or like The Lion King 2019, I mean, the man is, there's nothing he can't do. There isn't anything he would do that I wouldn't see.
And I'd say, I think we can both agree that whether people are persuaded or dissuaded by some negative criticism of the film, I think just going to see this in the theater just for the visual elements and this new way that they've made a film
and
is far worth it. And the music.
And so, the story.
Yes.
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah, I think we won't bore listeners anymore by gushing about Lion King more,
so
but
great.
I plan to see it in the theater once again too because it's amazing.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you, Ryan.
Thank you too. It's never too late to turn things around.
Ryan Jay is a nationally syndicated radio film critic. He can also be seen locally several times a week on television on today's TMJ4. He's one of our regular film contributors, and you can explore his past segments at WUWM.com.